Good evening. Welcome to Feminine Perspective. Our format consists first of discussion by our guest panelists of a topic of interest and concern to women, and second of an opportunity during the last 15 minutes for listeners to participate by calling with comments or questions. Our number is 864-4530. This series is sponsored by the Dean of Women's Office, which functions as a women's resource and planning center. We invite you to call our office at any time if you wish to discuss a matter of concern to you or if you wish further information. Better yet, come in person to talk or to use our constantly expanding women's library in 220 Strong Hall. Last Monday, guest panelists Louise Wheeler and Barbara Blee Urey discuss legal inequities between the sexes. Tonight, our panel will discuss the proposed Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution, the need for it, its history, and its present status. Our guest panelists are Loretta Blana, a doctoral candidate in speech communications and human relations, and Karen Kiesling, advisor to the KU Commission on the Status of Women and immediate past executive director of the Intercollegiate Association of Women Students. Do you recall when you first became interested in or aware of the Equal Rights Amendment, Karen?
Well, it was when I was in graduate school at Arizona State University. I became interested in the Associated Women Students and then in the Intercollegiate Association of Women Students. Probably because I was a math major, and most of my friends, when they'd ask me what I was majoring in, would say, "Oh," and that was about the end of it. And through my involvement then with AWS, I became interested in the Equal Rights Amendment.
How about you, Loretta?
I learned about the amendment as I was learning more and more things about the women's movement. Since that time, I have chosen the Equal Rights Amendment as the topic for my dissertation in my division. And I've done research that I found extremely interesting on the long history of the amendment. It's been around for about 50 years. And on the arguments both for and against the amendment.
Mm-hmm. Last week, one of our callers asked about child care provisions affecting the Internal Revenue Code. I think we gave a rather incomplete answer to that question. And there have been some very recent changes. Could you, Karen, tell us about these changes?
Yes, the Revenue Act of 1971 provides deduction for household help and or child care up to $400 a month, depending on the number of children and the income of the parent or parents, combined income of $18,000 or less. The qualifying individuals, they have to show that the expense for the household or dependent is necessary for gainful employment, and then the dependent has to be under the age of 15 or physically or mentally incapable to care for his or herself. This, of course, won't affect the 1971 tax, but will be in effect for 1972.
Well, that's a rather amazing change, isn't it, from $600 maximum and with a maximum combined salary of about $4,500, which is the way it was before. In other words, a great majority of people would be able to qualify then if they had dependents as you described. The Internal Revenue Service incidentally told us today that they would be happy to answer questions about it, but it doesn't really affect, of course, our 1971 income tax. Now, the proposed Equal Rights Amendment, as it was passed by the House of Representatives, reads as follows. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. A passage of such an Equal Rights Amendment would impose upon women as many responsibilities as it would confer rights. Do you feel that this objective would be desirable?
It certainly would. The objective seems to be to make men and women equal in a legal sense. And that seems to be a very desirable objective to me personally, and when I consider the status of other women.
Too, I wouldn't want to have equal rights without the equal responsibility. I don't think that's fair either, to ask for something special without giving your fair share of the work, too.
Why do we need a special amendment? Don't we have, aren't we covered by the 14th Amendment?
The Constitution is written in terms of people, but it also is based on the common law assumptions, which consider men and women very differently. And the courts have ruled quite consistently that the 14th Amendment doesn't necessarily guarantee that women will not be discriminated against. So the 14th Amendment does not help women, or at least hasn't helped in the past.
I agree with Loretta, and I also think that having a constitutional amendment sets up a basic principle instead of just going through the courts and taking case by case or taking law by law. This sets up a definite principle that people will look at because they would study the Constitution more so than they would bills that had been passed.
The idea of having a law for every single case where women are discriminated against has been presented by many people who oppose the amendment, as you've indicated. But it's not only doesn't call attention to itself, but it's been very difficult for women to get special laws passed to give them equal rights with men. It's taken a long time to get many bills passed. Just this year, that's several bills that would have been helpful to women in education, for example, have failed to pass. So that method isn't very promising.
It's also expensive.
Mm-hmm. You have any idea how long it takes to get a case through the Supreme Court?
Well, in the Reed versus Reed case, which was the first one in which a woman was given any rights under the 14th Amendment, took 5 years and a lot of expense involved.
And even then, wasn't a very broad interpretation, I understand.
No, it was the narrowest interpretation that the court's given yet.
We discussed that in some detail last week. Loretta, you mentioned that there were people who opposed the Equal Rights Amendment, and I suppose it would be reasonable to assume that those who are profiting from inequalities might do so. Are there many women who oppose the Equal Rights Amendment, in your opinions?
I think most of the women's groups stand for the Equal Rights Amendment, are working very hard to get it passed, but there are some labor groups which have stood against the amendment since it was introduced, and they are generally feel that protective legislation would no longer exist for women if the amendment were passed.
What labor groups are you referring to? One of the prime movers in the history, in setting up the legislative history, has been Olga Madar from the United Auto Workers, and she claimed in her testimony that the United Auto Workers were unanimously behind the Equal Rights Amendment. So this leaves what?
As far as I know, that is the only labor union that's come out in favor of the Equal Rights Amendment. So the AFL-CIO and other unions are not in favor.
Now, if their primary objective is their fears as to what would happen to the very protective labor laws, what kind of an answer do those who favor the Equal Rights Amendment give to that?
One answer is that many of the laws that are designed to protect women, if they are protections, should be protecting men, too. And therefore, we should pass legislation designed for both men and women, which would be okay under the Equal Rights Amendment. If it's not protecting women, it's probably preventing them from earning wages they'd like to earn or from having the kind of job they'd like to have. And if that's the case, we shouldn't have those kind of laws on the books.
Also, since the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title VII, was passed, many states have already said that they or have taken off their protective legislation laws, and so they don't exist in many states today.
And some of the courts, of course, have said that the Title VII takes precedence over state laws. Ohio just recently came to that conclusion. About half of the women are covered by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and the other half don't have, of course, this kind of coverage. There are other kinds of laws that are often thought of as protective, that prohibit something for one citizen and not for another. Do you have any comment on that? Like Oh, working certain kinds of jobs or certain hours or lifting certain kinds of weights.
So far, I believe there are only 7 states that still have some kind of hours restriction, and all the rest of them, either by the Attorney General's office or by state legislation, have done away with their limiting of hours.
And something to think about, and take the case of weightlifting. There are men who probably should not be lifting certain weights either, so if we're going to have weightlifting laws, they should be based on the ability of a person to lift weights, not on a person's sex. If we're going to have laws regarding whether people can work at night or only in the day, that should be... Well, I can't think of a case where there should be a law like that other than a person's own decision to work at night or in the day.
I wonder how that ever came about, that the decision was made there were only certain hours that women couldn't work, to be sure they got them off the streets, or are they more dangerous on the streets than men, or what would conceivably be behind?
At one time, I think the labor leaders were attempting to pass those laws for everyone, so that some people wouldn't have to work 10, 15 hours in one stretch. And the most effective way to get them passed, I think they discovered, was by saying that women needed that kind of protection. Mm-hmm. And it's still, and have, succeeded in reducing the number of hours men can work to a certain amount since the early part of this century.
But you're saying if it's good, it should be good for everyone.
Yes.
Now, late last year, I believe it was, Ohio had such a case before its courts on the weightlifting. I think they had a 35-pound limit, and it came to the conclusion, or the court ruling was, that all employees, if that was a requirement, the 35 pounds, that all employees should have a right to, or must be given the right to approve, if they wish to do so, that they could lift that weight, if it was a reasonable thing. Of course, we even have had some executive positions that have required the ability to lift a certain weight. Well, would the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment... Now, you talked about the protective legislation. Let's go back just a moment to other objections that some people have given to who oppose the ERA. What about the draft? We've heard a lot about that, haven't we?
That's the one that I've probably heard the most about, having been a representative of a National Women's Student Association. They've looked to the students that are of draftable age to see what they say, and at the Intercollegiate Association of Women's Students National Convention last year, we passed a resolution saying that whatever selective service system existed, that women should be taken equally with men. And I think the reason behind that is what I said before: women with equal rights should have equal responsibility. And the problems now with the military are that women are really held back from volunteering. There's a 1% quota for women in the military, and they have to have a higher score. They also have to be high school graduates before they can even volunteer for the service. And there are many more women who want into the service than can get in right now. So I think it would be an advantage to many of them.
You know what the requirement is now for a woman who wishes to, say, join the Army? The educational requirement?
She has to be a high school graduate.
How about a man?
He doesn't have to graduate from high school.
He doesn't really have to have had any formal education, does he?
I don't believe so.
Other than the ability to pass the exam.
Right.
One of our past staff members is teaching members of the Army to read and write. They have the educational level below the 5th grade, the ones that she's teaching, so this really makes quite a difference. I note that according to our time that we would be happy to have your questions and comments. Our number again is 864-4530, and we would welcome any questions or comments that you'd care to make. And until someone calls, well, we'll just continue with the discussion. Are there any other disadvantages that you can think of other than just the sheer unfairness of saying that one sex must be high school graduates and the other sex doesn't have to fulfill that educational requirement? What other advantages are there being a veteran?
Well, of course, there are all the educational advantages of being a veteran. When you come back, you get the GI Bill to go to school, and you also, while you're in the service, have a lot of educational benefits. We had some hearings last year here at KU, and a woman major was here going to school and getting her PhD, and that was, of course, being paid for by the service.
It's an alternate option for someone who's not certain that they want to go to college, and yet they can learn a skill at the same time, travel benefits, for people who want to do that sort of thing. And of course, for someone who's worried that a frail 90-pound girl may be sent to the rice paddies or something to fight, just as the military now does, people, if women were drafted, they would be assigned to positions which they can fulfill, not positions which they are unable to fulfill.
Also, I noticed in some testimony that I've read, 9 out of 10 of the jobs now done in the Army are done by or people who could be civilians, and only 1 in 10 really carries a gun and goes out in the front line. And that's what we usually see, is that 1 out of 10. So there are a lot of jobs that women could do equally with men.
Is it possible, too, that since the statistics show us that that men are moving out of poverty much faster than women are, that the service has been partly responsible for this in the skills that they've taught the men who have joined?
I think that definitely
could be a factor. As the military increases their pay salaries, which they're just beginning to do, it could be a very good beginning job for a woman.
With the volunteer army that the president and many others are talking about, it's going to remove a rather interesting argument concerning the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, I should think. Well, would the passage of an Equal Rights Amendment achieve equality for women immediately, or specifically, what would it do?
What it would do is give a legal ground for a woman who felt that she had been treated unequally on account of sex to base a case upon.
What about a man?
It would also give a man the same ground.
It would also say that no state or federal government or city government could pass a law that treats men and women differently. And then each law that's on the books now would have to be looked at to see if it discriminates against men or women and be changed.
Some specific laws that it probably would affect would be restrictions on the property rights of women. And in divorce cases, many states have already made the changes, but in all divorce cases, alimony could be given to either the husband or wife, depending on who needed it, and custody of the children would depend upon the welfare of children rather than upon the fact that the mother is the one who generally gets the child.
Yeah. Anything else it would do?
Do a lot of different things. It would mean that all of the laws that still exist about maximum hours just for women or weightlifting would have to be eliminated in a certain period of time. As the amendment's written right now, it's 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so that would give the states considerable time to change their laws, 7 years from the date that the Congress passes the amendment until the date that it actually is totally in effect.
When would that be?
After it's ratified by all the states, it would be in effect 2 years after the last state.
Does it take all the states to ratify?
No, just 3/4 of the states.
Well, where is the CRA now in the legislative process?
Well, on October the 12th, it passed the House and then went to the Senate, and it's went to the Senate subcommittee of the Judiciary, and that committee, by a vote of 6-4, approved the Irvin substitute, which reads, "Neither the United States nor any state may make any law treating men and women differently unless the treatment is based on physiological or functional differences between them."
Imagine that being in the Constitution.
Physiological or functional differences. In other words, that would be building the principle of equality into the Constitution rather than the opposite.
Of inequality.
That's right.
I mean, the principle of inequality.
Uh-huh. True. So this substitute now goes to the whole committee, the Judiciary Committee, and they have a chance of reversing it and taking the wording from the House. I think there are about 3 senators that they're not sure how they're going to vote, and those 3 could make a big difference. Then whatever form it comes out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, it will go to the Senate floor, we hope, in February, early in February. And we're not really sure right now whether it's going to pass or not. Last year, two amendments were tacked on, the draft amendment to exempt women from the draft, and then the prayer amendment, which is just a tactic used by senators to defeat a bill. And as long as Senator Ervin is around, we're not really sure whether it's going to pass or not, because obviously they can't, you know, spend day after day tacking on amendments and having to vote them one way or the other. So it'll just depend on how much support Senator By and Senator Cook can get.
Since this is an election year and every senator this year is up for an election, women have a good chance to affect what outcome of this legislation will be by putting some pressure on the people that they're going to elect.
Yeah. I don't believe every senator,
every
just
member
a third
of the House and the third of the
just a third of the Senate
right.
will be
but that's certainly enough
to change.
I would imagine then that there would be a considerable number of questions asked these men as to what their stand is in regard to the Equal Rights Amendment.
Also, a lot of women's groups are trying to put pressure now on the president because he hasn't come out in favor of the Equal Rights Amendment, and thinking that if he gave his support, that might help an awful lot this year.
Now, I understand that he has come out in favor of it, along with every president since Truman, but you mean he hasn't struggled very hard to urge the passage of it?
And also when one of our new Supreme Court justices testified before the subcommittee, he said the president was for it, but most of the testimony was really against the Equal Rights Amendment.
And was this Mr. Rehnquist?
Yes, it was.
Now a member of the Supreme Court. We hear a lot about why are women unwilling to compromise, to take some qualifications rather than saying, no, we want it exactly the way it was worded in the House of Representatives without any qualifications at all. Is there really any reason for not compromising this exact wording?
The qualifications that have been presented for women to consider so far nullify the effect of the amendment and would be of no service to us to pass an amendment which would simply allow the inequalities to continue.
I understand we have a call. Would you come in? Hello?
Yes, Dean Taylor. This is Joan Handley.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask Karen if she knows how the Kansas senators feel about the Irving Amendment.
They hear the question. Okay. Karen?
I'm not sure how the Kansas senators will vote on the Ervin Amendment. I do know that Senator Pearson has come out as a co-sponsor of the Equal Rights Amendment as passed by the House, but Senator Dole has not come out one way or the other. He did vote for the substitute last year that Bayh put in, as did Senator Pearson.
Do you know which senators are very much for this Irving Amendment and against the original bill?
Well, lists are available say exactly how every senator voted on.
I know she
for
said
last year, but I don't know for this year, except in the subcommittee, that there were three others besides Ervin who voted for it. Those were Senator Eastland, Senator Fong, Senator Thurman, Senator Herska, and Senator Burdick. Those are the ones who voted with Ervin in the subcommittee.
Now, what I was wondering was if perhaps we should write letters to those particular senators about our feeling on this particular Irving Amendment.
I think it would help, of course, to write to Dole and to Pearson, but also to write to, I believe, McClellan from Arkansas is one of the ones that people are saying can be swayed as far as coming out in favor of the Equal Rights Amendment. And he's on the Judiciary Committee, so that would help to write to him and to the other members of the whole Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have those lists in our office, in the Dean of Women's office.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Our number again is 864-4530. Back to another, hello?
Yes, Ding Taylor?
Yeah.
I have a question about the Equal Rights Amendment and welfare mothers. I heard that some women's groups thought that it would be not to their benefit to pass the Equal Rights Amendment concerning welfare women. I wonder if you could present that point of view and tell me exactly what your point of view might be on this.
Do either one of you have a comment on that?
It seems to me that welfare should be based on what the needs of people, not on the sex of people. And there's no reason why women who need money should be not able to get it after the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. Their need should be the basis and not the sex of a person.
I don't know what particular welfare group that you're talking about, but I have personally attended a good many meetings that have had welfare mothers and other welfare recipients there and have not really heard this point of view. Have you, Karen?
No, I haven't heard that either.
Well, perhaps this is another thing that we might look up and comment on next week, but I cannot think offhand why it would have any effect on the...
Well, they didn't specify, but that's all they said was it would probably have a disparaging effect on welfare recipients, especially the mothers, welfare mothers.
Well, we certainly will look into it, and also if you if you don't want to wait until next week, if you'd call the office, why we'll certainly procure this information for you.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you for calling. Hello, is there another call? I'd like to announce that we have two events coming up next week of considerable interest to women. One on Wednesday, or not next week, but this week, this Wednesday, day after tomorrow, February the 2nd, at 7:30 p.m. in the Union, Robin Morgan, who is the editor of Sisterhood is Powerful, will speak in the Big 8 Room under the auspices of the SUA Minority Forum. Are now familiar with this book, you'll find that it's an excellent collection of essays from by a number of people on a variety of subjects of concern to the women's movement. And then on Thursday of next week, February the 10th at 8 p.m., Marlene Sanders, one of the ABC correspondent and one of the few women correspondents in the United States, I believe there are now six, will speak in Woodruff Auditorium of the Kansas Union as part of a week-long spring symposium sponsored by the KU Commission on the Status of Women. So this Wednesday, Robin Morgan in the Union, and a week from this Thursday, Marlene Sanders, ABC correspondent. The public is welcome at both events without charge. If an organization you belong to is presenting a program of interest to women, let me know, and we'll be glad to announce it on this program on Monday night. Next week, our topic will be women in the professions. We'll be joined by the present chairman of Committee W of the AUP and last year's chairman. These two women, Marilyn Stockstead and Joan Handley, will speak next week. Discuss the question of women in the professions. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us again next week.
And again next week for another in this series of live programs. It's 7:30. You're tuned to Public Radio, KANU. Clear to partly cloudy skies with little change in temperature. The Lawrence, the low temperature, expected to be in the teens. And now by recording traditional jazz. These programs are prepared.